Welcome to the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast, where we explore the spirituality of the Christian child through the method of the catechesis of the Good Shepherd. I am your host, Carrie Mecki Lozano. We are so happy to announce that the book, Nurturing the Whole Child, Montessori Principles Applied to the Catechesis of Children by Jana Gobi, is now available in print and on Kindle. So for many years, we have been looking to update and clarify and add to Jana's written work that was held in the book Listening to God with Children. And so this new book is now published through our imprint through Liturgical Training Publications. This is a beautiful book with chapters from Jana written after the publication of Listening to God with Children. And it also has photos and an appendix of articles from others who have written about Jana, including her closest collaborator and friend, Sophia Cavalletti. So Rebecca Roycevich is joining us on the podcast today to share some of her memories of Jana and how her collection of writings has come to be. In this episode, Rebecca talks about a beautiful piece of art that a child drew that is in The Religious Potential of the Child by Sophia Cavalletti. It is figure 11. And I wanted you to be able to look at the picture even if you didn't have your copy of your book right in front of you. So I put a link in our show notes that you can just click it and look at the picture. Rebecca also will be answering one of our listener questions at the end of this episode, and it is about helping children normalize in the atrium. I hope you enjoy. Rebecca, welcome back to the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's always great to have you on the podcast. And I'm especially excited for you to be with me for this episode since you knew Jana Gobi personally. I'm excited to hear your take on who she was and any memories that you might have of her.
Oh, a great pleasure. I had met Sophia before I came to Rome. In fact, it was Sophia's words and the American Montessori Conference where I went to a workshop in Houston, and it was Sophia's presentation of the Good Shepherd and her word that let me know this was a real match to me and my journey. But I had never met Jana until I went to Rome in 1979 to do the two-year course for levels 1 through 3. And that was the first time I met Jana. What was particularly impactful, really, about my relationship with Jana was that she did not speak English. And at that point, I did not speak Italian. So there was a lot of silence, but I quickly learned that it's okay just to communicate through the eyes. And I had a sense of her from the beginning, that she was just completely ready, open, willing to help in any way she could. I made a connection with her that was different than Sophia. That is part of the longer story that I hope we'll have a chance to talk about a little bit, how different they were. But Jana was so grounded, so clearly off the earth, and I related to that. I felt comfortable and at home with her being so present physically, her sensory nature, all of that was clearly very rooted in the earth and in the children, of course. So I had a great desire to learn from her, to watch her in the level 1 atrium and to learn from her. And then, of course, over time, I was there 2 years, I did learn to speak Italian and was able to have real conversations with her. So that the relationship grew in a different way when we could actually directly communicate with one another.
It's neat because it's almost like your progression with Jana is similar to the child, because the relationship with the very youngest child,
yes,
is not with words.
Yes.
It's with the eyes and with your body,
right,
and modeling and that kind of thing. And then later you develop the verbal communication. So it's kind of like what your progression with her was as well.
Right. I've told people in level one courses especially what a gift my not speaking Italian really ended up being, because I was forced to learn the way a very young child, pre-language child, learns. And it was painful sometimes, because I so wanted to ask a certain question, or I wanted to share a particular insight or observation. It was especially difficult on, at that time we had atrium on Wednesday, and after the atrium we had a meeting around Sophia's table, all of us, all the catechists and, you know, assistants and all, and there were things I had seen, I had observed during the atrium session that I so wanted to be able to share, but I would just sit there mute because I was afraid I couldn't say it correctly. But again, in the end, that was one of the great gifts, is that I had to let go of understanding everything, of being able to communicate, and then and depend on other ways, as you said, on body language and the eyes, all of that. So it was a gift.
Yeah, I see that. Were you already a Montessorian before you went to Italy?
I was. And that is certainly part of why I felt such an immediate kinship with Gianna. I had been a Montessori primary directress for 5 years before I came to Rome. So I was already somewhat experienced, by, if you consider 5 years, experienced Montessorian. And so I didn't have to struggle to understand why Gianna did what she did or the way she was with the children. I was that path was very clear. I understood that, and that helped a lot.
Yeah, it seems like y'all both spoke the language of the child already, so that you had that common ground as well.
Right, exactly.
So then, Rebecca, you also had a special role within Gianna's book as well.
I did in the 90s. A couple of people from the U.S., they wanted to publish what was then, and they still refer to it in Italy as the dispensa, which is really just a copy, you know, stack of papers that has a name. And that was the Montessori principles applied to the catechesis that they used in courses. And the participants in the Rome courses could read it. These people in Pennsylvania wanted to make it available to the wider community. And so they asked Sophia and Gianna for permission to do that. And they gave that permission under the condition that I would be the editor. So that's when the publisher at Treehouse had said, okay, you can be the, you know, you can edit, you can whatever. And that's when we began to do what was then renamed as Listening to God with Children, with Montessori Principles Applied to the Catechesis of Children as the subtitle. So that long process, it was, for me, it was a very important personal growth in courage, because I did not consider myself a master of Italian by a long stretch of imagination. So as I read the dispensa, that stack of papers, and as I read it, there were things that I thought, even in the Italian, would not be understood if there wasn't a line or two added or whatever. And I was very nervous about that, about making any changes, but I felt like I had to put it down the way I thought it would be most clearly understood. And yet what I did was I highlighted in yellow every place in my translation where I thought there needed to be added a word. The most challenging one, it spoke about how the greatest need of the child in terms of how they respond to the parable of the Good Shepherd was their need for protection. And I knew that they had since made the huge discovery, tremendous discovery, that in fact, there's a higher level of relationship going on with the young child and God, and that, yes, they feel safe with the Good Shepherd, but there's something even more and at a higher level, and that is they enter into a relationship of friendship. Anybody who reads or is familiar with Sophia's book, The Religious Potential of the Child, 3 to 6 year olds, knows that there's a drawing in there, figure 11. I've used it so many times in places because you look at that drawing and there's a lot of yellow, which is for the art psychologists say is the color young children associate with joy. And you see all these sheep lined up around the edge of the paper, each of which have a name. You see the Good Shepherd is standing there front and center holding a sheep on his shoulders. And immediately you feel this is a joyful, happy picture. Mm-hmm. Well, the sheep around his shoulders has this look of dizzy bliss on his face, right? And I loved that. For many years, but it took me many years to realize the more, even more profound statement, really, of this drawing is when you look at the face of the shepherd. He is equally or more so happy, joyful, blissful.
Yeah.
So for me, it was also a huge discovery. They made it first, that this level of friendship is a higher level of relationship. But then seeing that in that drawing is what really opened my eyes in a new way to how important that is. So when I was doing the translation of Rhonda's book, I knew that they had made that discovery. So the biggest risk I took was adding at least a paragraph which proclaims that level of friendship is the even higher level. Well, I sent off my manuscript to Rome, and I was very nervous about it. But when it came back, Sophia, of course, needed Sophia to help because of her English. But Sophia, beside every addition or change I had made, slight change, Sophia had written in the margin, in pencil, Benny. Good. Mm. Around that paragraph about that I added where I had taken the greatest risk about the relationship of friendship, she wrote Benissimo, which is, you know, the extreme, the extreme of Benny. So it was a huge relief, of course, and was very grateful for it. And that book is such an important text for us who work, especially those of us who work with younger children, because those Montessori principles are even more visible and necessary than with the older children, although they are always important. We see it most vividly in the work with the younger child.
It's such an easy text to read as well.
Yes.
You can tell that Sophia is a scholar whenever you read The Religious Potential of the Child. But Jana's texts are just easier to read.
Right. Again, because she's so rooted, so grounded in the life with the younger children. The younger children are the greatest teachers of all.
Okay, so now we have this new book for Gianna. Can you tell me more about that?
Over the years, there have been different talks Gianna has given in conferences and so forth. Some of them appeared first in our Journal of the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd USA. But when it came time to make this text newly available, there were some editorial things, words, missing lines, or whatever we knew needed to be corrected. But we also wanted to include other material because this is Jonna's only book. And so we wanted it to convey as much as possible who she was and her immense contribution to this work. So that whole process ended up in a new book called Nurturing the Whole Child, retaining the same subtitle of the Montessori Principles, because that's what we stand on in terms of how we know the child, how we know their greatest needs. It's the discipline behind the content of catechesis is the Montessori discipline. So I'm excited about it. They tell me it's going to come out really soon. It will be a treasure for anyone who loves this work, loves this way of understanding the child and serving the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's invaluable. Like it's a beautiful text. Do you have a favorite part about this book? Some piece that you think is really valuable to us as adults or just that you think is really beautiful wisdom?
Oh, I think in that chapter on sensitive periods, like I said, of course, I'm very attached to that because of my own experience of reading it and translating it and trying to add something that I knew they had already discovered. So that's a very special chapter, especially because you really have that sense of this work, Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, truly is respecting and following the child. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know the child, we cannot possibly follow the child. Right. We cannot possibly make that match where we're bringing them to what they most need. So that chapter, and then I love the chapter on helping the child to pray.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty profound. If you look at other writings and books about young children's spirituality, I've never encountered anyone, any place where the author underscored the importance of silence and the child's capacity for silence. Yeah. And I think that's pretty radical in the, you know, in the world of religious education, especially of younger children. But of course, that too is rooted in Montessori's understanding of the child and the profound potential in silence.
Right.
I love that chapter too. So
I do too. I like that chapter. And I love that it's placed as the last chapter in the book, just like we mm-hmm. end everything in prayer. So Jonna book also follows and ends in prayer.
Right. That's exactly. Beautiful. Exactly. Yeah. And where she makes it so clear, how do we help children? How do we nurture children's prayer life? And that's another very delicate subject that needs clarification, that needs someone to say, all we really need to do, you know, and then she goes into it, offer them an ordered, beautiful environment that the material aspect of that environment alone calls a person to prayer, to be focused, mm-hmm. to be settled, that we leave time and space for them to respond, not forcing them, not saying, you know, now it's time to say nice things to Jesus. It's we create right. a space for it. We give it time. We give them specific presentations that are God's word, God's action in the liturgy. You can't expect an authentic response if you don't give someone something to respond to. And of course, what we give them right. is not ours. It belongs to God and to God's church. So we're putting that in their hands and we're giving them space. The other indirect aid that I think is very important is language. So we give them prayer words in those little one-word psalm cards we have, or the slightly longer verse from the Psalms, and we're giving them language for their own prayer, but nothing mm-hmm. usurps the importance of their own way of expressing their prayers, which is not going to be to fold their hands and close their eyes and say rote prayers. It's going to come from their hearts. It's going to be spontaneous. So it's a very important and rich book for people to really know the child from this particular lens of the catechesis, but also Montessori. So I'm very excited that it will be available soon. And it's helpful not just to catechists in a parish atrium, but it's helpful to parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Me too. Thank you so much for your work, Rebecca, in bringing us Shauna's words.
Can I tell one little story? Well, there's two things. When I was thinking, preparing to do this, there were two things that I wanted to underscore. And the first is, what does it tell us about the catechesis of the Good Shepherd that two people, Sophia and Jonna, could not be more different in terms of background, personal style, not to mention even their physical presence, their bodies? They were so different. And yet, those differences worked in such a harmony as to say, this is what Catechesis of the Good Shepherd truly is. This is the authentic thing, is that you bring these many gifts, and because the child is in front of you, because you are devoted to service of that child's relationship with God, then those differences enhance and enrich. They do not cause division. And Sophia and Jonna were certainly that. In one of the journal articles I recommend everyone read, if you haven't, when after Jonna had died and we did a commemorative journal, Sophia wrote a very powerful piece about her relationship with Jonna, and it's in that journal. I think it's just called Jonna. Yeah, but it's a very beautiful thing. I wanted to say that, and I wanted to say, I think on the most personal level, all that I knew and loved about Jonna came to a head, was crystallized, I want to say. Several years later, at Easter time, I then had a 3.5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and we took them to Rome for Easter. I didn't expect anyone to have time to do much other than meet with us and, you know, give us an abbraccio and maybe a cup of tea. And I knew they'd be happy to see us. But Jonna, even though it was a busy week, Easter week, Jonna had made a plan to take us, especially my daughters, to the Villa Borghese so they could ride a pony. And for me, that was the most beautiful reminder to me, or vision to me, of who Jonna Gobi really was. No matter how busy she was, she made a plan. She wanted my girls to ride ponies in the park. So thank you, God, for Jonna.
Yes.
For all she was for us and continues to be.
Such a great example. Mm. Well, before we finish today, Rebecca, would you be willing to answer one of our listeners' questions?
Sure. Try.
Okay, the question is, how do I help children who are not used to a Montessori environment get normalized? How long does this take over the course of the year? Should I expect a little chaos at the beginning of the year? Do I need to set stricter rules at the beginning?
Okay. First of all, children, especially in level one, though, we need to think, you know, it's going to be different for each of the developmental periods. But for a young child, we should not even expect them to walk in the door and be already attuned to the way we do things in a Montessori way. I recommend that, first of all, that before a child enters the atrium, you meet with them one-on-one with their parent. You meet with them in the atrium even. You get a sense of where they are in terms of their own body control, their own ability to concentrate or to listen. And that already gives you a sense of this child before they ever enter the actual atrium group. I say I can always tell when I first meet a young child the quality of their home life in terms of settled, are they used to being, you know, in one place with a routine and so forth. Not that I can tell whether their mother was Montessori trained, that's not important, but have they already received those most basic sense of themselves, a sense of independence, a sense of routine and order in the home? No one should feel bad if their child doesn't have that. But I'm saying this becomes important for us in how we will welcome that child and how much help we know they're going to need to enter into this particular space. So forget any Montessori experience before they walk in the door of the atrium. Don't expect that. Don't look for that. I will tell you that for my first 15 years after my training in Rome, when I was at Christian Family Montessori, it was beautiful because the children, we started when they were three. I stayed with them till they finished sixth grade. I got to know and see that. And everything they were doing in that school was Montessori. So you weren't going against anything in their daily life. It was just the icing on the cake when they came to Atrium. But right. That's not a realistic situation for most people. So in the atrium, what we need to be very aware of, most aware of, is our space really ordered, and does it emanate peace and quiet and order? I mean, that is a key part in the child's ability to focus. So the environment, but also ourselves.
Right.
And little children know if you are rooted yourself, if you are peaceful yourself. They know that. The child has a particular sensitivity to the adult who's grounded, who knows where they are, who knows what needs to happen, and who's peaceful about it, and takes that leadership. In the beginning, every young child, every child needs a lot of structure. I always love the Montessori saying that we give children as much structure as they need, no more and no less. So if I would say, to me, the most practical advice to any new any catechist with a new group is, in the beginning, you will direct their almost every move. We are going to do this. Now we're going to do that. The ability of the child to come in and go about their work is what you're hoping for and building towards. But in the beginning, they need someone there saying, let's see how quietly we can carry a chair and put it down. See, they're mesmerized by a good leader, and we need that in the beginning of the year to really establish what is this environment and how is it different. Now, mm-hmm. You're going to have a child here and there who is borderline, can't handle for whatever reason, takes them longer to be able to settle, okay? And so you need to expect that. Not every child is instantly going to sit and listen to you in rapt attention. That's okay. Right. But you need to have someone in that space, an assistant, who can shadow them, who can attend to them with their greater need for supervision or direction. But there's nothing more important to say than that this is only a tool to help them become independent. It is not a teacher-run atrium. But in the beginning, they have to know what this space is. And they need a strong lead catechist. And of right. all things, if you want to establish it, do not. And I've been in parishes where this has happened. They get two or three volunteers to do the level one. And so they alternate. One week, the lead catechist is this person. Another, the lead, I'm sorry, they need a shepherd. They need someone that is consistently there and is consistently leading this space. And and you then you get to witness how amazingly they begin to change. Little boy in the level one atrium at my parish, I'm not the lead level one catechist. I have to be the level three lead catechist. But a little boy, I substitute sometimes in level one. And there's a little boy in there that clearly he could not come to the gathering. He just couldn't sit down, couldn't sit still. So I would go ahead with the group presentation or whatever, and one of the assistants would accompany him. But now he's one of the workers, one of the best workers. So we have to always let children have their own time to be able to choose work and stay focused and put it away and all those things. It's a process. So only once in my 3 years of being a catechist, only once did I have that meeting with a boy. He was 3 and a half. I had a meeting with him and his mom before he was going to start the atrium. And even in that quiet setting where it was just me and his mom and him, he runs over to one of the shelves with the materials and takes his arm and scoops them all off into the floor and climbs in the shelf and lays down. That's all it took for me to say to his mom, he's not ready. We need to wait a little longer. So we have to also be realistic. Some children initially may not be ready to enter this kind of environment. And so we work towards it in stages.
Right.
Very rare.
The part of her question where she says, should she expect chaos at the beginning and does she need to have stricter? I feel like what you're saying is, yeah, it's not chaos. It's more needing more direction. It's more needing potentially more adults in the room at the beginning.
I'm so glad you come back to that, Carrie, because that is critical to understand. These children need to know from day one what kind of place this is. They are not capable of, you know, chaos comes when children are acting out their own inner energies and they are just, and there's no parameters. But I'm saying from the time you greet them out in the hallway, you're telling them, this is a special place. You're calling their attention. It's like almost, you know, almost like you're hypnotizing them in a sense, if you want to be.
Right, with a twinkle in the eye,
With a twinkle in the eye, but no, you should not have chaos at the first. Right. It is not a good sign. It is a very difficult sign. So think about it. They need to think about, what do I need to do before day one? And there are many things you can do. Have two or three children come together only and do some practical life activity. Do something practical life is usually what is most effective. So you may have to bring them in slowly. You don't just say, we're going to have a level one atrium. It's going to start next Sunday. You know, anyone come.
Right.
It's an indicator that you, how do you need to prepare them to enter this space?
Right.
There should not be chaos. No. In fact, if in many years I've started with only a half an hour, and the next week I've done 45 minutes, and then the next week an hour, and the, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Stagger the amount, you know, build that up, the amount of time that you're even in the atrium together.
Right.
What are they capable of? How are you going to help them gradually be able to be there an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending if you're a Sunday morning model? And it's a process.
Right. Right. And a lot of repetition in regards to ways of the atrium. And because when you have that good, strong foundation of ways of the atrium, that allows the children to have order internally that leads them to that normalization that she's seeking.
Absolutely. That's why, yes, that's why all those control movements, which they love. If you love it, they will love it. When you right. say, when you do all those little lessons about, or presentations about how to carry a chair, or how to walk in and out of a mat, how to roll a mat, they don't find those things, you know, these obnoxious rules. They're excited about them. If you
right.
show them bit by bit, week after week, you keep adding these highlighted, this is how we do this.
Right.
And let them practice it.
Right. And when you do that well at the beginning, spend a lot of time at that at the beginning, I find the normalization comes very easy throughout the rest of the year.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you planning on going to the 40th celebration in August, Rebecca?
Oh, yes. I'll be there. I'll speak there.
Yay. Can't wait to hear your wisdom more there.
Thank you, well, awesome. Carrie.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Carrie, as always.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Good Shepherd and the Child podcast. So if you check out our show notes, I have a few things for you there. There is a link for you to purchase the brand new book, Nurturing the Whole Child. In this book, you can find the article that Rebecca was talking about called Jhana by Sophia Cavaletti. You can also find that in the commemorative journal that we have about Jhana Gobi. So I have a link for you to purchase the new book, Nurturing the Whole Child, as well as a link if you do not have a copy of the commemorative journal about Jhana Gobi. There also is a whole section about Jhana Gobi in Anne Garrido's book, A Year with Sophia Cavaletti. So I went ahead and put a link for that in there as well. I went ahead and put some links for some episodes that we've had Rebecca on the podcast before. She is a wealth of knowledge. And so if you want to listen to more of what Rebecca has to say, go check out those episodes. I also put links in the show notes for episodes either about Jhana or about her writings from listening to God with Children or some articles that she has given us in the journals. So check that out as well. This new book, Nurturing the Whole Child, this would be a great book for y'all to dive into for a summer book study. And so we have some podcast episodes that can go with some of the chapters in that book. So feel free to check that out if it'll aid you as well. Don't forget that we also have the audiobook that Rebecca actually is the narrator for. We have it now available through Audible. So I have some information in the show notes about that as well. I also want to begin telling you guys about our 40th anniversary celebration for the United States Association of the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd that we will be celebrating this August, August 22nd through the 25th. So we will be celebrating both in-person and live stream. The in-person will be in Phoenix, Arizona. And there's a link in the show notes for some information about that celebration, and more information will be coming soon, including on how to register. So write that down in your calendar so that you can join us either virtually or in person. This podcast is sponsored by the United States Association of the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd. If you would like to know more about the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, or if you would like to become a member, please go to cgsusa.org. Thank you all for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks. Go and fall more deeply in love with God.